Would you be seated, please? Here is the back story on the first reading. Elijah has made the mistake of shaming the prophets of Baal, and by extension, their patron, Queen Jezebel. This is the same, for those of you who are on the parish council, this is the same Jezebel who is the subject of our children's youth and family program. We have a whole strategic plan called Bringing Up Jezebel. And if we can get Jezebel to still love the church by the time she goes off to university, that will be a good deal indeed. Jezebel is the pagan wife of King Ahab, who, although an Israelite, is apostate, having allowed the prophets of Baal under his roof. And he did this not least because his pagan wife is, how shall I say, not to be trifled with. In any case, Elijah had challenged these prophets of Baal to a sort of liturgical duel in which both he and they would call upon their respective gods to send down fire from heaven and consume a sacrificial offering. Elijah wins the contest, of course, because the whole point of the exercise is to show that the God of Israel is the only true God. And he responds then by putting all the prophets of Baal to the sword. Now, this puts Jezebel in one queen-sized snit. And she has decided to find and destroy Elijah the prophet. And so today, we have Elijah fleeing into the wilderness, collapsing under a solitary broom tree, and daring to pray his death wish to the Almighty. We could probably learn something from such honest prayer. But an angel intervenes, miraculously providing a hot cake and a bit of water, and saying, "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you." Well, there had been no journey in Elijah's plans for that day, only brooding and, if possible, to die. But God is apparently not much attracted to self-pity, nor to the abandonment of vocation. And it's noteworthy in this context, however, and I think it's an accurate reflection of the spiritual life, that what God gives Elijah in this instance is not relief from his troubles. That's what we would all like, right? A quick fix. But rather what God gives him is the courage and the energy to traverse the hell in which he now finds himself. And the writer tells us that he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights on a journey to Horeb, the Mount of God. Horeb, otherwise known as Sinai, and among the most sacred of places, because it was here that God had shown God's self to Moses. It was here that the law that Ahab is over here so flagrantly disobeying had first been given. It was here that the covenant between God and the Israelites had been sealed. It was a holy place. So from this we are to take that when Elijah goes looking for God, he looks at the place where others have found him. There's no need to go chasing after the wind or spending big bucks on the latest offering from the guru du jour, or grazing at the sort of piecemeal spiritualities offered at some kind of New Age smorgasbord. Fact is that some of the most compelling stories of divine human encounter, of mystical awareness, of deep peace, awe-inspiring courage, emerged right here in the Church of God. where God has always said that God could be found. Where did the saints find God? On their knees, literally, I mean, in fastings, in penitence, in prayer, in deep, chatterless silence, and in availing themselves regularly of all the means of grace entrusted to us in the sacraments. You know, I would feel better about all the other places that people go looking for God these days if I thought that we had been even halfway serious about looking in the places he is already known to be. I think it was G.K. Chesterton who said, "The problem with Christianity is not that it has been tried and found wanting, but that it has not yet been tried." And here is the thing. God does not disappoint Elijah. Elijah will meet his God at Horeb. And the manner of that meeting, of course, is the subject of today's reading. So it's only 2 weeks ago that we heard the story of the Holy Spirit descending upon the believers as a violent rushing wind and in the form of fire over their heads. So it's not to be thought that God is never obvious. But the experience of Elijah clearly indicates that God is not always obvious. Maybe the contrast between the wind and earthquake and fire and the so-called still small voice is better understood as a contrast between violence and gentleness. It's a contrast between the way Jezebel made her presence and power felt, and for that matter, the way in which Elijah himself had thought to demonstrate the power of God to the prophets of Baal, calling down fire from heaven and then showing 400 of them the point of his sword. The difference between that and the brooding, creative, protecting presence of a God who will not overwhelm. Who needs overstatement if understatement will do? This, I might add, is an operative in Anglican liturgy. But what, you ask, if Elijah hadn't got it? What if he hadn't heard the faint murmuring sound, or as the New Revised Standard Version puts it, and probably wrongly, the sound of sheer silence? But he did hear it, and he heard it precisely because that is what he had come for, and he was listening for it. We can come to the place where God makes God's self known, and God will not disappoint us, but we need to bring something like intentional expectation to the encounter. I mean, you can hear the readings, or you can really listen to them. You can say the words of the confession, or you can use them to confess a real sin. You can put out your hands to receive the sacrament, or you can actually receive Christ into the dwelling place you have prepared for him. It does seem a shame to have come all this way and not to make it the moment of a genuine encounter. Now, Elijah is going to be our constant companion over this next month. Giant though he is amongst the prophets, his experience is recognizable as our experience. His example sets before us a worthy course to follow and cause for confidence in the God who will meet us when at last we have traversed whatever personal hell is engaging us now.